This episode of Show Me the Meaning is brought to you by Mubi. For your free 30-day extended trial, go to mubi.com/wisecrack. Hey everyone, welcome to Show Me the Meaning, Wisecrack's movie podcast.
Show me the meaning!
My name is Jared. I'm joined here with the Show Me the Meaning crew. We got Ryan.
Hello, film fans.
And Austin.
Yo.
And returning again is Greg.
What's up, what's up, what's up?
All right, so today we're talking about the 2018 film Deadpool 2, directed by David Leitch, starring Ryan Reynolds. I want to start this asking the person I know who is, at least the person I know loves Deadpool, Ryan, what did you think?
Well, you're right. I love Deadpool. I gave it an A++++ when it first came out.
You mean Deadpool 1?
Deadpool 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This movie, I give it an A-. I really, really liked it a lot, just as you figured I would. Not as good, hence the A-, but I would say there's about 500 too many movie references for me scattered throughout the film, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, I laugh my ass off, which is my main criteria for a Deadpool movie. The Winnie the Pooh leg scene, I was dying on the floor. You know, it was amazing. And then some of the action scenes were hilarious. I love super comical action scenes, like Three Stooges-esque. And I feel like we got that with like the car chase and him like driving the car with his ass and stuff. Mm. It was amazing. So yeah, all in all, I had some problems, especially with the end, which I'd like to talk about. But like, yeah, overall, great movie. Great time at the cinema.
All right, great time at the cinema. So let's move to Greg. So Greg, I understand you had not seen Deadpool 1 as of last week.
No, I watched Deadpool 1, what's today, Tuesday? I watched it Sunday, like around 11 o'clock. I was like, all right, this is cool. You know, growing up, I didn't really fuck with Deadpool. I was like, who's this guy trying to look like Spider-Man with guns? But I saw the movie, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I like the anti-hero theme, you know, shout out to burn victims. I dug the whole theme of the movie, just like we know how all these superhero movies are like blockbuster movies, and I like that it was kind of a movie that didn't take itself serious and also shitted on itself at the same time. And I just like when Hollywood does that. And I saw Deadpool 2 and I was like, okay, keeping up with the same theme. It wasn't as good as the first one, but still, I think could have been on Showtime.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So not a good time at the cinema. You wanted it to be on your laptop.
No, I just think it like I'm not a fan of all the superhero movies. I think they're overdone.
Well, me neither.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But that's why I like this.
But what did you think of it as like just a piece of comedy and like Ryan Reynolds is like a comedian?
I thought it was funny and corny, but I like how it jokes itself and it doesn't take itself seriously. I even like the credits. They're doing a lot of new stuff. I would love to be in the writing room to see what doesn't hit. And like, it seems like everybody's in the writing room just high as fuck. And just like, yeah, let's do that. Oh, that sounds cool. Yeah, yeah. Oh, we murder the girl. Oh, I'm sorry, spoiler. But, you know, I like the movie, but I still don't think it's should be in a movie theater.
All right, all right. Austin, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed the first one. I wouldn't say that I loved it, like A+, but yeah, I would have given it like a solid A. And just in terms of time at the theater, right? Like, it's one of those films that I had a really great time in the theater with. So I was hoping to have a similar experience with this one. And to be honest, I thought it was really mediocre. I kind of thought that everything was too much. The action scenes were too long. They were too CGI'd. The humor was too forced. The back and forth quips were just like three or four lines too long. The ending scene was too much. The sappiness was too try hard. And so everything was just too much. And so it ended up actually being, rather than over the top, it was actually really bland for me.
Well, fuck you too.
I'm glad we have this dynamic today, because I think I'm like midway between Austin and Ryan. I actually thought the best parts of the movie were the parts where it was sincere. Like the best part of the movie was when Ryan Reynolds was like running towards his girlfriend as
fuck yeah
she's getting shot, and and then like when he hugs the guy and jumps in front of that bus, like,
yeah, that was cool.
That really affected me. Mm-hmm. And I wanted more of that. And overall, I liked the first one. I just think that this fourth wall breaking thing, it's gonna get, I think it has gotten old. I think it's like right around the corner from just being trite. And but I want to talk more about that, because something was going through my mind in this film that I want to talk more about. But yeah, I mean, I would say good movie, fun. There were definitely some jokes I laughed at. Ryan Reynolds is ace. He's the reason why these movies work. But other than that, yeah, it was pretty mediocre. Like, I really expected them to take it to the next level, but it really was just Deadpool 1, except replace romance with family.
So if Cabin in the Woods is the death of cinema for you, Jared, this has to be in that same category, right?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I think it is sort of like that, but
it's Deadpool 1, but meta-er.
No,
right?
It isn't. It is. Just in the frequency of meta jokes, but not actually. It's no more subversive. That's what I want to talk about first after the recap. But I think that this movie, Deadpool, is no longer subversive. Like, it's just like formulaic at this point. And that's,
I guess,
something,
frequency is kind of what I'm saying then too.
Yeah, there are more jokes because it leans into what they know works. But yeah, anyway, let's go into the recap. So Deadpool's plan to start a family with his girlfriend Vanessa is thwarted when she's killed by some thugs. So Deadpool tries to kill himself and is taken in as an X-Men in training. On a mission with Colossus and the other X-Men, Deadpool witnesses a young mutant named Russell in the midst of lashing out at his abusive boarding school headmaster. Identifying with Russell's pain, Deadpool tries to kill the faculty, landing him and Russell in prison. Meanwhile, a time-traveling mercenary named Cable infiltrates the prison and attempts to kill Russell because, in the future, Russell kills his wife and child. When Russell overhears that Deadpool doesn't care about him, he leaves him behind and teams up with the Juggernaut to take down the headmaster. So Deadpool and Cable team up to stop Russell, but as part of the deal, Deadpool will get an opportunity to convince Russell not to kill the headmaster, thus keeping him from spiraling into a life of violence. Russell doesn't listen, and Deadpool takes a bullet meant for Russell. When Russell sees someone cares for him enough to sacrifice himself, he spares the headmaster and embraces his new family with Deadpool, Colossus, and the rest of the X team. End of movie.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, so guys, I want to talk first about just the nature of breaking the fourth wall. And I feel like when Deadpool 1 came out, breaking the fourth wall was a, like, subversive way for the writers to give us an authentic glance at the writing process. Like, the writers would pull back put the facade aside and kind of show their real selves. And my main criticism of this movie and what it was felt like watching it is, you know, when you think about the writers writing this movie, I think of them just, you know, they're just writing a bunch of fourth wall breaking beats. So, right. For example, and so there's no real authenticity to it because breaking the fourth wall is just another comic technique that these writers use as part of the Deadpool aesthetic. So, like, when let's take one joke, for example. When Deadpool says, remember, there's the part where he's explaining that, oh, Cable can only go back in time twice. And then he looks at the camera and says, that's lazy writing.
Yes.
So I would say that, you know, when Deadpool 1 came out, that would be a fresh joke because we would say to ourselves, like, oh, OK, yes, that is kind of subversive because we're pointing out that sometimes writers take shortcuts. But now that we know that breaking the fourth wall is part of the Deadpool aesthetic, really breaking the fourth wall, or what I'm now going to call the fifth wall, is like the really subversive thing would be if he looked to the camera and said, wasn't that lazy writing? Oh, and so was that. Because the lazy writing isn't Deadpool, isn't that Cable can only go back in time twice. The lazy writing is the fact that they just slot in a meta joke because they have to. It's like when you're writing a comedy, like an animated comedy or a television comedy, you have to have a certain amount of jokes per second. And when you're writing the Deadpool movie, you have to a certain amount of meta jokes per second. Therefore, when you're breaking the fourth wall in a Deadpool movie, especially after Deadpool has been established, and now that Deadpool is now a multi-million dollar, billion dollar franchise that is now just part of the canon, it's not really subversive. It's manufactured subversion.
So then you really only get one sequel, because you can't be like, that was lazy writing. Well, and so was that. Because then in the third one, you got to be like, well, and that was lazy writing. And that was too, right? And you have to have another piece and be like, and so was that. So it's like...
Right, yeah.
You basically want them to comment on the meta writing is your main critique, is that they didn't do that enough? Because I feel like they did it to a degree.
I don't think they did it at all.
Well, there was no self-awareness, is I think what Jared is saying.
Right. So, like, breaking the fourth wall.
I think the whole movie was self-awareness.
No.
No, it was self-referential, and there's a difference. Yeah.
It's not self-aware about its own, how stale its own self-awareness is. Because I disagree that it's, that you have to transcend the fourth wall. I don't know. Like, I agree that would have been a extra joke that I would have appreciated, you know, once. But you're saying that they have to do that once, or else it doesn't make the rest of it.
They don't have to do anything.
It would have made it better.
I wanted them to look. When Deadpool 1 came out, it was fresh. It was, oh my god, we're inundated with all these superhero movies that play on all these tropes.
Ferris and Bueller now came out, and you know, it's the same. Like breaking the fourth wall like that has been around. I wouldn't say device is fresh. You know.
But as egregiously as Deadpool did it, sure. Especially when when he breaks the fourth wall, he's exposing the tropes that basically dominate the movie industry, because, you know, like superhero movies are kind of the oil that keeps the gears turning in the movie industry. So I think it had kind of like a heightened relevance and a heightened...
Because it's a superhero movie.
Right. And so when Deadpool 1 came out, it's like, oh, this is fresh because we see superhero movies all the time. And here he is revealing the kind of... tired tropes of superhero movies, but once revealing the tired tropes of superhero movies becomes part of the system of superhero movies, then it's no longer subversive. It's just another trope.
One thing that I would say that was kind of them doing this, but not really, but them referencing the first movie as a movie so much was kind of, I felt like, another transcendent meta level, you know, like they kept talking about, you know, Logan stealing his movie and how the R-rated stuff, he's talking about it like it's a movie, this very popular movie, which it was. So that is kind of having a meta person, a meta character talking about their very successful meta movie in a meta sequel. I don't know.
Well, sort of, but I would say that it would be a lot better, or it would have been actually subversive if it was, hey, of course I'm not going to die at the end of this movie because I got six more movies to make and you motherfuckers will never stop coming. Like, that's truly subversive.
Well, they know they know they can't lose. That's what the watching the first one and watching the second one was like, oh man, the first one was such a hit. They know they can do anything. That's why the jokes are still funny, but it's not, they know the movie isn't as good as the first one, but they don't care because they know they can make, like you said, six to seven.
I bet you the third one will do that. It'll say, Jesus, motherfuckers just can't stop spending your money on this same recycled bullshit, huh? Well, here you go.
I'm sure they will.
I bet you
that
they will.
That would be...
I think Greg is right. I think they know that it's tired. They knew that the second one's not going to be as good as the first one. It's rarely ever that a sequel is as good as the first one. But nevertheless, they were kind of just... they were trying their best to work within that medium. I would bet moving forward they do press those bounds a little bit more because they kind of have to.
Deadpool in space.
Well, they have to, and I thought they would have to with this one. But the thing is that breaking the fourth wall in the way that Deadpool does it, like, that's the status quo now. Like, every superhero movie is Deadpoolian in some fashion. Like, in Avengers 2, you know, when Hawkeye says, like, I don't know what's going on, and I'm holding a bow and arrow. This is ridiculous. I mean, is he looking at the camera? No. Is he still breaking the fourth wall? Definitely. So there's definitely, I mean, Deadpool definitely does it more often and is definitely a bit more profane and obscene than other superhero movies, but...
totally.
But look, like, I just think that Deadpool is fucking soft. Like, this is not subversive art the way the first one was. And there are a couple jokes that I just thought they left so many things. Like, another actual subversive thing is T.J. Miller... They should have called him out and said, oh, this guy's never going to be in the movie again.
That would have been dope. Yeah, that would have been awesome. But I mean, it's hard to say Deadpool 2 is soft. I mean, we did get a dick shot in Deadpool 2, which I thought was kind of risky.
I'll give it that.
Dick shot.
I mean, it's a hardcore movie.
That scene, you know, by the way, in was a lot of fucking regards. Ridiculous.
That's the movie's ridiculous.
Oh my God. Yeah, I was almost crying. I was laughing so hard. It was so ridiculous.
My favorite joke was the Jared Kushner joke.
That was good. That was amazing. Yeah, that was good.
That was good.
I mean, don't you feel, though, that they played around with just like the just time itself more, obviously, because it's a time travel movie, but, you know, them rewinding the movie at the end, and it's kind of a big fuck you in a way, I felt like, to...
You mean the post credits?
Well, yeah, but I mean, they literally just said in the post credits, the movie ends, and then they go, "Oh wait, bzoop, never mind, none of that happened that you just watched."
I mean, it would have been it would have been crazier if that happened during. I mean, the post credits, I guess you can kind of do whatever the fuck you want.
Right,
but yeah, no, I agree. It is crazy that in the end of the movie, they basically just made the whole conflict of the movie irrelevant.
And you think that's soft?
I do. Here's another. here's another example. So. You know, what was the character's name? Like Black Joe, and there were all these like race jokes.
Oh, hella race jokes.
He
called her Black Widow, which was so funny.
Oh, yeah. Domino. He called Domino Black Widow.
And then her superpower was just being lucky. I mean, it was, funny. Very racial.
I love Domino.
It wasn't really Black Jim or Black Tom, but he kept like calling him different. Black Tim, Black Joe.
Well, no, he called himself, "Yo, I'm Black Joe" in the can, but it was like Deadpool kept thinking or making the joke that, oh, it was because he thinks he is black. But
he said, like, what are you here for, appropriation?
Right, yeah. So those are definitely good one-liners, but I guess me personally, when I see a Deadpool movie, I want him to show me the fucking truth. You know what I'm saying? And I want if he is truly cynical, then he needs to pull back the veil and not just show me like, oh, this is another trope of, you know, like calling out. But okay, so Black Joe, like, I feel like that's the safest race joke ever. I think would have been a much more subversive race joke was if while they were casting Domino, they said to Domino, it's like, oh yes, plus we get our diversity quota. Like that would be like,
yeah, you're right.
That would show like real cynicism. Mm-hmm. Like
it seemed right. That scene was kind of weird. It seemed like watching that scene, it seemed like they probably did have that type of joke in there, but they cut it for some reason.
Yeah, their banter, their back and forth banter. I'm glad you're saying this because I felt uncomfortable and I don't know why. And I think what you guys are saying is absolutely right. That scene where she's auditioning and they've got that like back and forth, the quips, it fell flat for me. And I felt like, okay, this is, like I said at the beginning, everything was just too long, like one or two lines or two or three lines, just too much. And I felt like, okay, like you're not really doing anything edgy or cool. If they kept pushing it and they kept pushing the actual tension in the script, then I think it might have kept my attention more or kept me more engaged, but it didn't. So I was kind of like, all right, when is this going to go? You know?
Yeah, my theater didn't laugh during that sequence either.
Yeah. Yeah, no one laughed in the scene. I kind of fell flat. And I don't know, man. It's interesting because, Jared, I think you're putting the words to the sentiment that I felt, that it was kind of, it wasn't edgy enough. It was almost like it was like, and this is the thing that Deadpool shouldn't be, it was almost like they felt the specter of liberal Hollywood standing over their shoulder saying, I don't think you can go that far.
That's exactly what happened, guys.
Do you think that's it?
Yes. So, like, that's the thing. If Deadpool was truly subversive, they would poke fun at liberal Hollywood, but they don't. They still play ball.
Well, they're not stupid.
Yeah, don't bite the hand that feeds. But here's
don't bite the hand that feeds. But at the same time, man, I thought Deadpool was about saying fuck you. You know, that's the distinction. If Deadpool is just about breaking the fourth wall and being self-aware, like it is in the comics, fine. You know, if you want to stay true to the comics, cool. But to me, I want Deadpool to transcend the comics because it is now no longer the comic medium, but a film medium, and in a new cultural context. And I think Deadpool should be about middle finger up, you know, 100%.
They're throwing the middle finger up.
Hence my A-.
But they're not, you know, it's like there's a limit, you know what I mean? Like, you could throw your middle finger up at everybody, but but certain people that are producing and putting this movie together and paying your checks. It's like, nah.
Yeah.
I guess so. You know, even Ryan Reynolds, I mean, he's seen careers ups and downs hardcore.
Totally.
So he probably doesn't want to fuck anything up and say anything too obscene. But I guess, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, if you think of it as just a sequel to the first one and it's more of the first one, then it's a good movie. If you think of it as like, you know, someone, or if you think of Deadpool as the character that should pull back the veil of ideology and, you know, show us kind of the what's, you know, the real stuff going on, then he didn't do it, and I'm disappointed.
I agree that it was a missed opportunity in that regard, but I still maintain great time at the movies.
Yeah, when you say great time at the movies, is it mainly because you thought it, like, it was just funny and engaging, and the action was good, and the story kept pushing
it had,
you forward?
Or? Yeah, amount of laughs per minute. Every joke that I agree with you fell flat for me. There was another joke a second later, and I'm really into the whole self-referential style to begin with. And to me, there was a frequency to it that was like, wow, they're fucking with time. They're fucking with the characters. They're commenting on other movies in Marvel. They're commenting on, it was so,
politics.
It was like meta in your face to honestly, too much degree, I thought, that at points. So that's why I was kind of surprised when you said that. But then you clarified that they just didn't subvert the meta-ness.
Right.
Kind of
but my point is that when breaking the fourth wall becomes like just a tool
a
in
routine.
The writer's toolbox, then you're inherently building a fifth wall.
I mean,
that
it's like
then
being
needs
on,
to be broken.
It's like being on Twitter and being around troll culture, and at first you're like, oh, fuck, man. That's gnarly. Like, they're really taking the piss out of this person. And then after a while, you're like, bro, aren't you just tired? Like, that troll shit, the meme troll shit, it's just boring now. It's not cool.
Yeah.
It's not subversive. Cool. It's not doing the thing that you think that it did or maybe that it once did. It's just kind of old hack now. I'm tired.
Yeah.
Move on, motherfucker. Grow up. Next stage.
What I thought you were going to say was that, you know, that there's the trolls that – your standard everyday troll, but then I feel like there was the trolls that evolved that were like, all right, we're gonna troll the trolls,
yeah,
you know, and then we're just
yeah.
gonna, you know, that whole Rick and Morty paragraph that went around everywhere that was you gotta really understand the copy pasta of that,
yeah.
You know, I feel like that was an evolution of trolling. A fifth wall was
the
created.
Trolling.
A fifth wall
yeah,
of trolling
absolutely.
Was created.
Yeah, no, that's
absolutely.
Cool. And that's what I mean. Like,
we're trolling themselves.
Yeah, aesthetics should always be progressively growing. Like, if art is going to be subversive, it has to be existing at the margins of excess. There's a I think he was Russian art critic, theater critic, Shklovsky or something along those lines. And he talks about this, that if art is going to be transformative, it has to be existing at the margins of society. It has to be confounding the codes. And if it's not, then it's just safe and it's not transformative or transgressive art. So,
right.
If
and I don't want to go to a yeah. Deadpool movie and feel safe.
Well, right. As much as I agree with that, and I do, it's just that I feel like you guys put too much emphasis from one movie to the next that it has to transcend. Whereas like, okay, I get that on Deadpool 3 or 4, yeah, I want him to go to space and have it be like in 5D or break the seventh wall. But like on Deadpool 2, can't we? I mean, like, we're good, right? This is a kind of a little elevation of Deadpool 1, and I'm good with that. Great time
sure,
at the movies.
Sure, sure. However, I would say when Deadpool 1 came out in 2015, we live in a different world now.
Totally.
You know, a different
it was
world.
2 years later.
I know, but it
Trump's
3 years later.
For a year and a half.
But yeah, so this brings me to, I want to transition to talking about the serious moments. And I want to talk with a quote from Zizek. And we've talked about him a couple of times in the podcast. But he said in a talk recently, he said, our current times are so obscene that the truly subversive thing is to be authentic and serious.
Mm.
And
normcore, baby.
Normcore? What's that?
Oh, man. You haven't heard about normcore?
No.
It's just, you know, people that just, it's the aesthetic of just being, you know, normal.
Being normal.
Wearing like dad pants and
normal
not trying to buy like
khakis.
A new, yeah, wearing khakis and just simple glasses and like a frumpy sweater and...
Is that
yeah.
is this a real thing?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Dude.
Normcore. It's a culture. Normcore.
Go to Buffalo
like
Exchange
it.
And go pick up some sort of like cheap but nice, you know, secondhand.
You're not trying.
Not too
you know?
Fashionable.
You're just normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To the core.
To the core.
So I think the most in that vein, I think the most subversive element of Deadpool 2, which would be a movie that everyone would hate, would be if we saw all the marketing of Deadpool 2, all the ads that are super self-aware, all of the billboards that, you know, have him making fun of himself or making fun of other movies, and then you go down and you sit in the theater and it's a straight drama.
Oh my god, that would have been so awesome.
Right?
If they trolled the audience.
If they trolled the audience, that would be the most Deadpoolian thing.
See, the thing
but
I like about
everyone
that.
Would hate it.
Yeah. No, that's what I like about it is that. So I think that this sort of like a kind of postmodern, self-referential, ironic detachment essentially has like a disdain for the audience's expectations. Like, that's part of the point. I mean, this really goes back to Bertolt Brecht, right? In the idea of epic theater, what he calls the alienation effect. And he was a theater director and theorist. And the idea of the alienation effect is that you suspend all of these suspensions of disbelief. You don't want the audience to come in just blind and just fully empathically connecting, because you want them to be aware that this is a performance. And we're actually working on a project right now about a comedian that does this to the T, right? Bo Burnham. And it's this idea of playing with the form itself so that you know when you go into the performance that this is fake, that this is artifice. And then what that's supposed to do from a Brechtian perspective is it's supposed to then kind of allow you to engage critically with things. And then as the audience, you become self-aware and you become sort of self-destructed or deconstructed as you're watching it. And so this kind of postmodern breaking the fourth wall, playing with the form, self-referentiality, ironic detachment is supposed to do that. So when you lose the capacity to do that because either the audience isn't as effectively engaged, then you kind of lose the power of the message. And if they would have done something like that, I would have loved it, because that, again, shows that disdain for the expectations that the audience has based on what they're accustomed to with regards to performance. And that would have been something
fun. That takes balls.
I know.
That takes balls and like risking everything.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you guys the serious parts. Were you more touched the serious parts in Deadpool 1 or Deadpool 2?
I totally agree that those first, when she's getting shot and then when he jumps in front of the bus, I was very moved.
Yeah.
The parts that I was most moved in the first one was the going between the holidays montage, you know? I thought that was like the most romantic device for a movie, you know? And I love that. So I can't tell you which one I liked more, but I like that both movies, you know, emotionally moved me at some point, even though, I agree with you. I wish there was more.
I love the sentimental moments with Blind Al. I feel like those moments are, like, kind of really dope and touching. And
in the first one?
In both of them.
Okay.
I love that their relationship together. It's almost like a mother-sister type. When she says, I can't hear you with that pity dick in your mouth.
A tear went down your eye.
Oh, I'm keeping that one. That pity dick one is going to be, it's going to stick with me
there's
forever.
There's something that's nice because they're still being jokey, but there's some underlying substance to that allows that joke to also, you realize that there's like a love relationship there. And I think that's nice because that's his whole thing, right? He doesn't have family and shit like that. So that's why his girl is kind of like becomes his family. So I think in the second one, they're trying to play off the fact that her death then is like the end of his world, the end of his meaning, the total collapse of all the standards of meaning. And I don't know. Again, it kind of fell flat for me. The family stuff fell flat for me in the second one. I thought the relationship stuff was sweet. I mean, like, look, I'm a pussy when it comes to movies. I cry at fucking everything. So I got a little teary-eyed at the end, especially when they kind of get reunited and shit, like a little bit. But that doesn't say much because I literally fucking cried. I watched Mississippi Grind last night and I got teary-eyed afterwards, which is another great movie, by the way, with Ryan Reynolds. But, I mean, I cry at fucking everything. So I don't know. It didn't reach the heights that it did in the first one for me, I think.
Yes, I mean, for me, I'm repeating myself, but that moment when Ryan Reynolds is rushing toward his girlfriend when she's getting shot is amazing. Like, I mean, that really, and even that whole sequence up to him hugging the guy in front of the bus, like, I want more of that.
Mm.
And I don't really think I got it.
Mm.
I also, and maybe this is just because I wanted something a little bit more serious, because that hit me on a level that none of the jokes did. But I don't know. I guess we did see this, but that kind of like desperation that we see him feel when he hugs the guy and puts him in front of the bus, like no matter what, I kind of feel like no matter why you're going to see this movie, if you're just for the jokes, I feel like that affects you.
That
like,
scene?
I don't know. I don't know what you think.
Yeah,
but
I when I first saw it, I was like, this is weird. Why is he hugging him? And then he turned and boom, I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? Why do you think he was hugging him there? What was it?
Well, it's because he's like he's trying to like hold on to death in a sense. He's like I want to go with you. Like, you know, I want to go with you. I want to hold on to what you're about to experience, which is death, which I yearn for.
And he's watching a bus coming and we don't see it, which is kind of cool too.
Mm.
Yeah. We kind of see it throughout the rest of the movie, like that Deadpool does desire death. and that's super cool and super interesting. But I don't really think that it ever really hits the – it doesn't hit you emotionally or intellectually after that one moment. The bus moment is like – it's that's the peak of the movie for me.
They tried really hard to get emotional, you know, when he'd go – back into those hallucination room and see his old girlfriend, you know. Mm-hmm. I really don't like those devices where you're like talking to ghosts of your like the Star Wars thing.
It's kind of cheap, right?
Yeah. Like so yeah, that didn't really work for me either.
All right, let's talk about the ending. I know you want to talk about the ending, Ryan. What did you like? Not like.
Well, for one, I loved the long teary death of Deadpool, you know,
hilarious.
In that moment. That was amazing.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer style, right? Remember Pee Wee Herman when he kept dying?
Oh, okay. Yeah, good reference.
I'm old, guys. I'm old. I'm
good
sorry.
Reference. Yeah, definitely.
But in the moment, I would say I was definitely like when they went back in time, really in the post credits and stuff, and turned back the movie, I was like, "What the fuck?" You know, like that was my
that
main.
That bothered you.
That bothered me. You know, like, but then the more I think about it, I'm like y'all have been even talking about today. Deadpool's like a big fuck you. The movie itself, you know, if I guess I'm cool with it now, but in the moment, I was like. Wow, so we didn't watch a movie? Like, I guess time travel, when you introduce it, it always just fucks everything up in your mind.
So you're talking about the post-credit sequence. That's the ending you didn't like.
That's the ending I'm talking about.
Okay.
That bothered me, you know. Okay. But and then ending with him. Oh, yeah. Like, what is it? So he signed that little girl's, or guy, I forget. But, like, he signed to Ryan Reynolds. Mm-hmm. That was a funny joke.
Yeah.
And then he shoots Ryan Reynolds. So Ryan Reynolds is
an actor. At that point, it just
actor.
Doesn't make sense. I don't.
Well, I guess it doesn't make sense because he's, who would act as Deadpool? So I don't know. What's your take on that? I mean, that just kind of, I was like, and I'd heard about the really funny post-credit sequence, so, and that was supposed to be it.
I mean, those are funny. Some good jokes. I mean, I love that, you know, I mean, they are, it's amazing that Hugh Jackman and 20th Century Fox are willing to make fun of the fact that they made a really shitty Wolverine movie, and it's funny that Ryan Reynolds is willing to shit on himself for making a really shitty Green Lantern movie, and that the studio is okay with that. That's pretty awesome. Those parts are great. Has anyone seen Green Lantern?
No.
Me neither.
Yeah, I have.
And?
I mean, he tried his hardest. I love Ryan Reynolds, but yeah, the movie is not good.
Yeah.
We are
the real Brady Bros.
Brady Brothers from the TV show Brady Bunch. I'm Barry Williams.
And I'm Christopher Knight.
I played Greg. And who were you again?
I played Peter.
We've decided that we're going to do a podcast around episodes of the Brady Bunch. We're going to use it as a prism to look back to our experience doing the show and why the Brady Bunch is still popular.
Have a sunshine day.
We are the real Brady Bros.
I think watching the movie, the ending part, I didn't understand why Cable just didn't go all the way back to the part where he was shooting his girlfriend.
And just kill him then? Yeah.
Because he didn't have enough charge in his thing or whatever. Isn't that the lazy writing answer?
Well, they had enough charges to get back to where he was at. Why couldn't
like 30 years ago, why couldn't he just go like 5 minutes ago?
And Deadpool could just take off the fucking the necklace. You know, you don't have to go back for that. I thought that was kind of cheap. But, yeah, just go back to the part where his girlfriend is about to get shot, kill that dude, and then you're good.
Honestly, Cable, the whole character, really kind of
disappointed
me.
Well, that's what he does at the end. Did you not stay for the post-credits?
Dude, I loved Cable.
No, I didn't stay for the post-credits.
Oh, that's exactly what
that's
happens.
What they did?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah, yeah.
All right, yeah, I left.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you saying, Austin?
Just to be clear, I didn't stay for the post-credits either. I had to watch the wisecrack quick take that you guys just released this morning or whenever it was to even be like, oh, fuck. And I thought about it, too. I was like, oh, I bet there's a post-credit thing. But I was like, fuck it. I got to go.
This is amazing.
I felt the same way, Austin.
Wow. Okay, so y'all saw a totally different movie because the movie me and Jared saw ended with them rewinding the movie, basically going back to before they shot the girlfriend, and then Ryan Reynolds saves his girlfriend. There you go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then he
the whole movie becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, the whole movie didn't happen. Nothing happened. We didn't see anything. All that happens is that Ryan Reynolds, in real life, gets shot before he can make Green Lantern.
Yeah, there's a shot of Ryan Reynolds, the actor, looking looking at the script of Green Lantern and saying, "Welcome to the big time, Ryan," and then like Deadpool comes back behind him and shoots him in the head.
That's all that happened in the movie. All right.
Those are the two post-credit sequence.
Yeah, see, I think that's funny just because I think Ryan Reynolds is charming and it is fun that he can make fun of himself. That's great. But I don't know.
Didn't he marry Alanis Morissette?
A while back.
Ryan Reynolds?
I don't know if they were married, but they were together for a long time.
I mean, he dated Alanis. He dated Scarlett Johansson.
And who is he with now? Blake?
Blake Lively. Blake. Yeah, they got a couple kids.
Couple? God damn. That dick.
So, I guess, how long do you guys think until in the mainstream meta becomes trite? Do you think? I think it kind of did happen. Like, I think that 20.
We're already there, pretty much.
I mean, 22 Jump Street, I think people were like, okay, this went too far. In this one, I think it still works because Ryan Reynolds is great. But what do you guys think? I don't even like in Rick and Morty when they do the meta jokes. Those are like my least
favorite.
When you say meta,
what do you mean? Because you were pretty clear that like you wanted to make sure that in Cabin in the Woods, there was a difference between like piss takes of yourself and then meta. So what do you mean by meta here?
Yeah, good point. All right, so I guess I mean just incessantly breaking the fourth wall. Or I don't even, like, there are some jokes in this, like the whole dubstep joke. I don't even understand what that joke is. Like, do they still have dubstep? No, dubstep is for pussies, and then they start playing dubstep.
Well, because they were saying that it was the DC films.
DC movies.
Used.
The DC movies had dubstep in them.
Oh, yeah. I didn't catch that.
Yeah, it was before the first time he fights Cable, I think. That's when they cued the dubstep thing because he made that comment. Yeah,
I thought it was because dubstep is in the future. Cable knows about dubstep and all the people that know about that listen to dubstep in the future are pussies.
I love that we got all different views. No, I remember the DC movies. They did have dubstep in them. I thought that's what they was referring to.
And then he literally says that. Like he says that at one point. There's like I don't remember if it was a voiceover or if he actually said it. In like live time,
the fight scene when they were in prison.
Yeah, he says something along the lines of like how DC used dubstep or something like that. So
I kind of cringed at some of those DC universe jokes. I mean, they were good, but man, that's fucking low blow. Especially when we're talking about how it's so hard to be authentic these days, and it's so easy to just be cynical and break the fourth wall and like basically do something and then apologize for doing it. Thereby, it's funny, and thereby you're protecting yourself from criticism. And like me and Matthew, one of our other writers, always talk about how like Batman v Superman, man, they tried to be profound, and hats off to them for that. I mean, was it a good movie? No, but at least they tried. So when I think about them just like fucking punching DC in the balls like that, I'm just like, oh guys, man, that's rough.
No,
you know?
People love shade though, man. Like people love that shit. So that people that were in there that have already, they've quickly either drawn the lines or they're interested to see. They're like, oh, shit,
So. Yeah. It's one thing of making fun of yourself for trying to be sincere like he does with Green Lantern in both the first one and the second one. But making fun of someone else for being sincere and then like not even really trying yourself is, I mean, I laughed. I liked it. But it's a low blow.
Total low blow. But yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you guys have any? So if you remember the production story about this movie, I believe, was it before production or during production that the original director of Deadpool 1 left because of creative differences with Ryan Reynolds?
Really?
Does anybody, Ryan, do you know anything more about that? Like what the nature of the creative differences were?
There's articles about it on the internet. I read them at the time. I can't remember. We should look it up though. But now that guy's making Terminator with James Cameron. So I think he got a better deal. And then also him and Ryan Reynolds, I guess, weren't getting along. It had something to do with one person wanted a lot of comedy and not as much, or one team wanted it to be the same movie as kind of the last
first Deadpool
movie, and then the other one wanted to kind of make it something more. Wow. I don't know who was who.
I mean, given from the movie, I have to imagine the person who wanted to make it like the first one.
I think that is the answer. You're right. The more it's coming back to me.
Now I'm curious to hear what the first guy wanted it.
Yeah,
the first
me too.
Director wanted
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he's
like,
awesome. I love that dude.
Oh, I wish they would have talked about that in a movie.
Yeah.
If you
want to
talk some shit, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. Maybe it's the stuff that we were talking about with breaking the fifth wall, or was like, Ryan Reynolds, like, no, that's the wall you can't break. I don't want to ruin my career.
How can you have an artistic beef about Deadpool?
Especially, yeah.
Just get your money and go home, dog.
And especially after your first movie is so successful, you know, I was really, I was pretty upset whenever that guy left because it's like, dude, you guys had a hit. Why? Why can't you make it work? What the fuck?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't think they could have done any wrong.
I don't think that, however far they would have pushed it, I don't think it would have fallen flat because I feel like they had so much leeway and that they had stored up so much capital, just kind of like
goodwill,
cultural capital and goodwill. Yeah, I think that they would have gotten away with so much more than they did.
Oh man, they could have unicorns fucking gorillas in this movie, and people would love it.
They played it MetaSafe.
They would.
They played it MetaSafe.
They showed his dick. We got a dick shot, man. Which I think we need more dick shots in movies.
Yeah, but you watch HBO, there's dicks flopping around everywhere.
It was not a MetaSafe movie, though.
Not in big movie theaters. Yeah. I don't see enough dick on in movies.
Another piece of Deadpool news, or I read an article where Ryan Reynolds was talking about how hard it is to make the movies because basically they have to tear him down to his core every single movie, you know? Like in the first movie, he lost, you know, he had this huge burn accident. And then this movie, he lost his girl. And so he's saying that basically that's how he saw the character, was that at the beginning of every movie, something had to be stripped away from him and he had to be this broken guy. So, I'm going to be curious to see where they keep going from here.
Hmm. You know, one of the also things I found interesting is, like, there were a couple times where you could tell that, like, so there are certain jokes, like the Thanos joke and the Jared Kushner joke, mm-hmm. which I think were probably just put in an ADR later.
Okay.
You know?
I can see that. They can make him say anything.
Yeah, they can make him say anything. That's what happens when you're wearing a mask. Yeah. You can just, like, go into the studio and I think
it's the Tom Hardy effect.
Right. Yeah, exactly. and I guess that's probably why Ryan Reynolds has, like, an executive producer credit, or I'm guessing, just because, like, he probably, a lot of those jokes were his. You know, that he either came up on the spot or, like, in editing or something like that.
Well, he'd be an executive producer no matter what. I mean, he is the franchise, you know, like. Right?
Was he in the first movie? Was he an executive producer in the first movie?
I'm sure he was.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, because that project's been around for fucking forever.
That's right, like, because, like, he was attached to it forever.
It had a very storied
this was his
production.
Baby. Yeah, this was his baby. So, I mean, he's definitely a producer, but whatever level, I don't know.
How many of these do you think they're going to make?
Well, I think the big question, isn't the big question if Deadpool is, what studio is this, Fox? So if Disney buys Fox, is that deal even still a maybe?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
If that happens, then Marvel gets Deadpool, they get the Fantastic Four, and they get X-Men.
God damn.
If that happens, then Deadpool's just going to become part of the MCU. We're going to see him in the Avengers movies. We're going to see the same thing with... And you know what? Can you imagine if Disney buys Fox, and then the way that they bring back all the characters from the end of Infinity War is Deadpool literally just hits rewind.
That would be amazing, actually. Yes.
I could see that potentially happening.
And Doctor Strange is like, it's the only way.
Right,
like,
right.
Because he knows Deadpool somehow.
Did you guys have any favorite other characters? Like, what did you guys think of Russell, the fat kid?
Oh, he was great.
Oh, he's funny.
But no, Domino, dude. Like the that's kind of what I was talking about before with the whole Three Stooges thing. Her whole scene in the car crash with just she can do whatever she wants and she's always lucky. What a great character, especially for this movie. Like, I love Domino.
Nobody laughed. When I watched it in the theater, I saw it in the Vista. Nobody laughed at any of her parts. It was almost like, lucky. Yeah. That's her shit, lucky? And it was just like everybody was just like... tense, but you know, she's hot, she can do anything.
Yeah,
she's
exactly
fucking smoking.
That's the unfortunate thing. I almost feel like, and because she had the gnarly push-up bra and she was banging hot, and I was kind of like, maybe that was their kind of way of sticking up their middle finger to some of the expectations, right, where people are like, oh, can we have women superheroes who aren't being objectified? And they were kind of like, yeah, we're still gonna have like a hot superhero who's objectified, but I felt like her shit fell flat a lot too.
You didn't like her in the car crash in the car chase?
No, I didn't love it. That's the thing, is again, it was bland. Like, I didn't hate it. I didn't think like she was terrible, but it just it just didn't seem to be like I could tell that they were trying to make jokes a lot of the time, and and it just the joke when you try to make the punchline sometimes it doesn't come. You know,
I mean,
I thought that was the joke. I thought that was the joke of her getting away with everything, and also her being a black chick getting away with everything and being lucky. I thought that was the joke. It was a definitely underlying joke, but I thought that was the whole joke.
Did it work for you? Like, did you think, like, beyond the fact that she's hot, did you think that she was funny or whatever?
Oh, I don't think she's funny. Like,
because she had jokes, though, right?
She's not funny in Atlanta. Yeah, I just think, I mean, she plays her character.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, she's the hot girl.
You're just blinded by science, dude. You don't give a fuck
I'm sorry, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, once again, when a movie like this has the kind of the frequency of jokes, like, and it's just like hitting you so fast, there becomes a point where you just become aware of it, and you're like, all right, they're gonna make me try and laugh here. It's coming. Right, I know they're coming every 3 seconds, and then you just kind of become immune. Like,
really?
You know, at least I did. Like, if there were, I'm not saying that there should be like no jokes. I'm just saying that like. When you're setting up a rhythm, like, you know, if I go dut, you can anticipate the next time I'm going to make that noise.
Sure.
But if I do it randomly, then I can catch you off guard. And so I'm just saying that, like, yeah, I'm sure Ryan Reynolds, you know, and all the team, like, they went back and they ADR'd and they polished the script so that there was something fucking hilarious going on every fucking second. Uh-huh. But I think that that can probably come and bite you in the ass, like, in an unexpected way.
When I'm in, when I feel like I'm in good hands of someone that's going duh, then I'm on board, you know, because I'm like, wow, I didn't like I said before, I didn't like that joke. I'm gonna like it in 3 seconds, and yeah, like with Matt and Trey Parker or whatever, like they will switch it up, and I feel like they're random, you know, to a point, but you know that you're gonna get something awesome all the time.
No, I'm with Ryan on that. I do think, look, that writer's room, that the comics are, just the funny writers that they have in there are killing it. I mean, because they're coming. Boom, 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 boom. Even if they're shitty and kind of corny, like the whole, he's right behind you, he's inside of you, you know, that part. I mean, they're still just going. It's a punching bag.
Yeah, I guess, you know, so Greg and I are big fans of Chappelle's Show. We talk about it a lot. But the thing about Chappelle's Show was legitimately subversive. Like, it was not only that he was going to be telling a joke every couple seconds. It was, what is he going to say next?
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't really feel like that with Deadpool. I feel like, you know, Deadpool, you get the tools. You know the tools. The tools are breaking the fourth wall, being obscene, you know, being self-referential, making fun of yourself. And yeah, once you understand that and get to the cadence, it's very easy to not laugh, you know?
I agree. Or I can see that, at least. But I laughed.
Yeah. Well, Chappelle's Show was trying to get canceled. You know, you got like guys that are like, hey, let's just see if we could get canceled.
It worked out.
Let's go to the limit so we can get canceled.
Yeah. All right. I think that's going to wrap it up for today. So I want to thank everyone for joining us. Where can we find you guys on the internet? Ryan?
You can find me on YouTube. I make a game show in my garage where I invite strangers off Craigslist to come and compete in games and stuff for $20. It's called Ryan's Game Show. Check it out. I love you.
Greg.
You can catch me on Twitter, Greg the Grouch, and also on Instagram, Greg Comedy.
Austin.
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter, Austin_Hayden. And just for y'all that want to know, Jared came on my other podcast this week, and we talk about like doing philosophy for a popular audience and the death of God and all kinds of other stuff. It's called Owls at Dawn. So you can check that out on iTunes. It'll be out tomorrow my time. Or tomorrow. Well, it's because I'm in Australia, so I'm 17 hours ahead. So it'll be out like in the next 24 hours.
That's
I'll just say
renaissance
that.
For you guys. Usually you upload once every 3 months, and you've done how many episodes this month?
I know, man. We're back on the groove. We're back on the groove.
Cool.
So, yeah, awesome. You can check out, if you don't have iTunes, you can check out the website. It's owlsatdawn.com, and you can stream and download our episodes there.
Like the at sign or AT?
AT.
Okay.
He's old school like that. And you can hit me up on Facebook, Instagram, at Father of Woody, or just hit me up at Wisecrack on Twitter. That's going to do it for today, guys. As always, thanks for listening. Peace.
Goodbye from Hollywood, California.
Laters.
Peace.